Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you've had to pay for a funeral lately, there's a chance and maybe even a good chance that you've been ripped off. Gold-rimmed caskets, merchandise packages, there are all kinds of ways to hit up grieving families who are at their most vulnerable just for a few extra bucks. After all, who wants to say no to something special for a loved one who's just passed? This hour, a look at the funeral industry and how you can avoid getting jammed. Later on this hour, Brian McTavish is back with the weekend to-do list. But first up, funerals. With us today, Joshua Slocum is Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. He is the co-author of Final Rites, Reclaiming the American Way of Death, and it's billed as the book that the funeral industry doesn't want you to read. And Josh, welcome. So good to have you here.
Good morning.
What are some of the most egregious practices of the funeral industry? I mean, what sets your hair on fire when you hear about these things?
This is an important point. A lot of the criticism that we as consumer advocates have is not about outright criminal behavior, right? In any sphere of business, you're going to find people who are doing a bait and switch or who are in some way trying to pick your pocket for their own benefit. We are actually more concerned with the everyday, ordinary practices of the funeral industry. Those are the things that we question.
Such as what? Give me an example of what you're talking about.
No one will admit it, but we all know that there's an undercurrent of the idea that the best and most proper way to show how much you love someone who's died is by conspicuous consumption, by spending on a funeral that is seen to be proper and dignified.
Yeah.
And so we have somehow equated money with love.
Spending money with love. The
right.
more money you spend, the more you love the person
right.
who
and
just
if you
died.
Didn't, yeah. you know, I mean, you know, sometimes, sure, you'll come across somebody in the funeral industry who will say, well, this is the last thing you can give your mother. Don't you want the best? That does happen. But it doesn't even have to be that explicit. The pressure is cultural, and it's more subtle than that.
You know, I've been through it in my own life and was really sort of astonished at sort of the checklist of things, at least the funeral home I was at when my mother passed a few years ago. You know, sort of the different things they wanted to sell us. My dad just sitting there saying, no, 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 no. He stood resolute, as my father is sort of wont to do. But boy, it's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, that brings up your father is sort of the unusual customer if he was resolute, because a lot of people walk in, they're literally a walking blank check. Most people will only arrange a funeral once or twice in their lives for somebody, right? It's not something that we have a lot of experience with. So you may be a really savvy shopper. You're going to compare the different Ford dealerships. You're going to look around. But most people don't shop around ahead of time. They simply use the same funeral home that they used the last time. And if you applied that to any other purchase that could cost that much, you'd say, oh, wait, how silly.
Yeah. Well, to be clear, Josh, you write that you're taking on what you call the most basic assumptions that underpin the contemporary funeral business. You're talking about the notion that money spent equals love shown. You've just talked about that. You're talking about the idea that funeral directors are so indispensable that no family can cope with death without their expertise, and the idea that funeral homes and cemeteries have a natural right to the patronage of every family experiencing a death. What about this idea that families simply cannot cope with the expertise of funeral home directors?
I'm about to blow your listeners' minds and tell them that in most states in this country, including Missouri, it is perfectly legal to do what your great-great-grandparents did. Take on the funeral as a family without hiring an undertaker, soup to nuts. Yes, you can do the entire thing yourself.
How much would something like that cost?
I like to say with my grandmother's funeral, we didn't take on the whole thing, but the afterwards, it cost me a tuna casserole and love, right? It takes love, time, and tuna casserole.
Yeah, you can do it.
You can do it. And the thing is, in the 19th century, all of our families would have considered it part of everyday household life, not a pleasant duty, but taking care of the body, getting the undertaker to come in and bring the coffin, having the viewing and the laying out in the parlor. This was normal. In just a century, we have completely forgotten this as a society, such that I can guarantee that you've got listeners right now who are going, really? That's legal? We automatically – we're so removed from it. It's been so commercialized that we think we're not even allowed to do it without professional help.
So what happened? I mean, when did we sort of transition from this notion that you can bury somebody – even dig a hole and place the body respectfully in the ground and cover them up to what has become today something far more lavish than that.
Well, very simply, urbanization at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, the fact that hospitals grew and death and illness became medicalized. People died in hospital rather than dying at home. We moved off the farm, most of us, and into urban areas. So it isn't a practical choice anymore. But yeah. All of those things come together. And of course, after the Civil War, that is when the funeral industry with a capital I really came into being. Before that, it wasn't anything like it was today.
And it happened after the Civil War. Why?
Because chemical embalming was invented in order to get soldiers transported on trains back. And Abraham—
embalming preserves the body, right?
Yes. And Abraham Lincoln was the best advertisement for embalming that the industry ever saw, because his body was on a train for a couple of weeks around the country, the funeral train, and he was embalmed. And this introduced the idea to people, and an industry quickly grew up around that. That was the professional expertise. I like to say the only thing a funeral director can do that we can't do is embalming. And if you don't want it, you know—
I think we've had a guest on the show in the past talking about Abe Lincoln and that sort of funeral procession that went on for a long time, and sort of the concern there was about sort of maintaining the president's dignity as sort of the days rolled on after his assassination, and sort of the placement of lots of flowers in his funeral car for maybe some very obvious reasons there.
Yes, but back in those days, they were serious about their embalming. It was arsenic-based. I mean, that stuff was a preservative. I think Lincoln would probably have lasted far longer than maybe most of us.
Because it had arsenic in it?
Arsenic, yeah. Heavy metal arsenic.
Arsenic, yeah, right.
Extremely good preservative. We don't use that anymore. Formaldehyde's bad enough.
And what about this notion I just mentioned a minute ago, Josh, that funeral homes and cemeteries have a natural right to the patronage of every family experiencing a death?
This is what I call the divine right of undertakers. And it's the idea that when you read funeral industry trade magazines, they refer to their customers as my families. In my town, the Smiths and the Collinses, et cetera, this is because almost everyone goes back to the same funeral home they used last time. There's very much a proprietary sensibility there. And you see this come up when my organization has to step in at the state level. A lot of times we have to fight regulations that are proposed that would make it difficult or impossible for families to care for their own dead privately. And when we say to the lawmakers, you know, there's going to be some unintended consequences here. We think funeral homes are important, but we think that the family's choice is important. It's met with considerable outrage from the funeral trade lobbying groups.
How powerful are they?
Well, monetarily, they're a lot more powerful than our organization for the most part. But the thing is, when people think about death at all, which they rarely do, they think, you know, a lawmaker might get a bill that says we're going to switch the language on death certificates to have this person sign and this dot and have this person sign. And they go to people that naturally they think of as the experts. You know, mm-hmm. Let's consult some funeral directors. But without a countervailing public interest and consumer voice, a lot of things slip through that you would never know. Nobody would think to look.
Yeah. And you have to keep an eye on that, it sounds like.
Oh, it's a full-time job. Absolutely.
And that's what you do.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Josh Slocum is our guest. He's co-author of The Final Rights, Reclaiming the American Way of Death. He's also executive director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. If you want to join our conversation with either a good story or a bad story about your experience with the funeral industry, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Do you feel you were taken advantage of during the funeral process? What would you do? Would you do anything differently if you had a chance? Again, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Well, Josh, how should any one consumer know if the family funeral home down the street charges reasonable fees, or how are they supposed to know if the home's business practices are good or bad? What tools does the consumer have at his or her disposal there? Yeah.
First of all, everybody already knows how to do this. I'm just going to shift their skills from buying a car or buying a new refrigerator into the funeral home.
Yeah.
You do what you do for other things. You shop around ahead of time. what we find, like, for example, the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Greater Kansas City, whose meeting I'm here for, like most of our volunteer groups around the country, conduct a regular price survey where they will go out to the funeral homes in their city and they'll collect the prices of everything from the simplest cremation to a week-long full-service funeral. You'll be shocked. Give me 20 funeral home price lists in any city, and I will give you a $3,000 or $4,000 difference even on a simple cremation.
Wow.
Prices are not the same. So you may find that the funeral home your family's been using for generations has got really moderate prices. They're great people. They take good care of you. But you won't know this unless you look somewhere else first.
And in Kansas City, then, where do folks go to get this information that you guys gather?
Well, the easiest way is to remember our website, which is pretty easy, funerals.org. And once you get there, you can look up our directory of local chapters, and you'll see that Kansas City has their own website with a great price survey. All their publications are up on there. And we have a lot of tips for people. What do you look for in a funeral home, right? What should I be looking for? What should I be maybe skeptical of?
What should I look for?
You should look for, well, first of all, know that you have rights. Federal Trade Commission has a rule called the Funeral Rule, basically a consumer's bill of rights. Funeral homes have to give you price quotes by phone. They have to hand you a printed itemized price list when you go in to speak with them. They have to let you pick item by item like your dad did when he said no to those things.
Yeah.
Before the Funeral Rule, which came about in 84, you had to buy the package. You got everything or you got nothing, but you have the right to itemize. And funeral homes are not allowed to misrepresent non-existent legal requirements to say this is a required purchase when that isn't true. So when you are considering a funeral home, price is one thing, but how they treat you when you shop around is also important. A good funeral home will be straightforward and candid. They'll answer your questions. They'll ask you where you want to go. Some places are more high pressure. They may say, oh, you have to come in and have a conference with us, and it may seem more like a sales pitch.
I can just imagine a lot of families when it comes down to these pivotal moments in their lives and, you know, maybe one member of a couple is worried about the price and the other spouse is saying, are you really going to worry about money at a time like this? I can just imagine those conversations happen all the time.
They do. And unfortunately, you know, people need to feel confident. They need to remember that the simplest funeral or the most elaborate funeral, number one, is not going to make mom alive again. It's not going to make mom any less loved or any less missed or any less honored. I have been to funerals that were very costly public affairs, and I've been to funerals that were very quiet homespun family potlucks. And the love and the coming together of family has nothing to do with the cost. So if you can remember that you can't show love through money, whether you want a big funeral or a small one, you'll be better off.
Lots of phone calls here as we talk about the funeral industry. Let's go to some calls at 816-235-2888. Mike from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Yeah, in Missouri, you know, for instance, I've heard that, you know, you've got to have a cement vault, you know, that the law requires it. And bottom line, what can a person do? I mean, you go out in your farm field and dig a grave and put the body in without any casket or anything like that?
Sure. This is important, and this applies everywhere in the country, not just Missouri, what I'm about to tell you. There is no law in any state that requires a vault for burial in a cemetery. There's no law that requires a casket as a condition of burial, and there is no law in the country, in any state, that requires embalming as a condition of public viewing. So none of these things are legal requirements. And my rule of thumb, whenever somebody tells you that something is required or barred by law when it comes to funerals, show me the statute or it's not true, because 9 times out of 10, it's a misunderstanding.
Okay, and let me ask you, are there a lot of cemeteries that insist on things?
Yes, there are. Cemeteries often require at least a concrete vault to surround the casket. It's a maintenance issue so that the ground stays level over time and the grave doesn't collapse. It's not a legal requirement. However, there's more and more interest in what's being called natural or green burial, which is done without it.
We're going to get there, yeah.
Yeah. So there are more cemeteries that are looking at doing vault-free burials. And once again, just like the home and family-directed funeral, green or natural burial is not a new way of doing it. It's a return to what we did before.
And what is that exactly? What are you talking about with green burial?
What I'm talking about is a formaldehyde-free funeral. No embalming, no metal casket, either a simple wood biodegradable casket, maybe a shroud, no vault.
Even a shroud without a casket at all.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. We're all ending up in the same place.
Yeah.
Right? So basically, you know, what's called green or natural is not product intensive. It's not chemical intensive. But it can also save you a great deal of money. You don't have to go out and find a specially corporate branded green package, right? And be careful about that. Remember that when you do something simple or a natural burial, it's about crossing off unnecessary goods and services and focusing on what's important.
You know, Mike, go ahead. I'm sorry.
One more question.
Yeah.
When you look at when you have investigated the price of funerals, how do national chains compare with local mortuaries?
There are a couple of large national chains, and most of the time they are among the most expensive in any market. There are some exceptions, but they're usually very high priced. That doesn't necessarily mean that a locally owned funeral home is either inexpensive or couldn't be very costly. They can as well.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, I'm glad you called. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
This notion of caskets, where did that come from?
Well, the very word actually is funny. They used to be called coffins, and the choice of the word casket was deliberate in the late 19th century because in the rest of the English-speaking world, casket means a box that you put precious things like jewels in.
Mm.
They very much wanted to distinguish the less death talk we have, the easier it is to I'll put it another way. Our approach to death is riddled with euphemisms, and I noticed that when you introduced the segment, you talked about somebody in your family passing,
mm-hmm.
right? This is what I call death in the subjunctive, okay? People call me up and say, well, I don't need your services today, but if anything were ever to happen to me, and it's my job to gently or a little less gently say that death is not an optional lifestyle choice. You know, it's right for everybody.
Yeah.
But the euphemisms, you know, talking about a loved one instead of a body, a casket instead of a coffin, an interment space instead of a grave, speaks to a psychological distance that we have from death that allows the commercial funeral industry to operate really in a way that other industries have to be more responsive to consumer demand. But mm-hmm. we consumers, it's changing a little, but we're not that demanding.
Why are we so finicky about death? I mean, what is it about our culture where the idea of a dead body just sort of causes people to recoil a little bit?
Well, that's a question for anthropologists and sociologists, but from my desk, yes. Because we don't experience it for real. Give you a quick story. When I used to be a newspaper reporter, I had to do a story on a terrible family tragedy where a house burned down and four children died. I had to go to the funeral home to do this. Never been to a funeral home except for my grandma's funeral. When it was done, funeral director said, would you like a tour? Yes. Takes me down a hallway.
This is your book. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very nice guy. Wonderful couple that owned this funeral home. Took me into the casket showroom. Turned on the lights, and all of a sudden, I was in a room full of boxes for dead people. And I literally felt lightheaded because I was confronted with this. I mean, it's not even the dead bodies. It's death by proxy. It's just the box, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I understand it, but this is key. 2 minutes later, the anxiety was gone. And I can tell anybody who's thinking about this, if you think your family can't handle it, oh, my kids will never talk about this, a lot of times you're defending your own self psychologically. And mm-hmm. if you just rip the Band-Aid off, maybe use a joke, maybe say, hey, remember when grandma died? What do we want? The fear goes away. And when you feel confident, it's better.
Okay. Back to some calls here. Let's go to John from Atchison. John, good morning. You there, John? Let's go to G1. G1, good morning from Warrensburg.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. How is it?
Good.
I'm 75-year-old, and I can cook any time. But I don't want to be embalmed or displayed just cremated, and the ashes given to my survivors. What do I do? How can I do that?
He wants to be cremated and not embalmed. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. This is easy. And remember, this applies to all kinds of funerals. You, the consumer, have the right to pick and choose. You can say yes or no to embalming, yes or no to a viewing. This is all your choice. What you're looking for sounds to me like direct cremation. That's a standard term. No matter where you go in the U.S., all funeral homes offer direct cremation. It's very simple. Okay. It's picking up the body, getting the paperwork done, doing the cremation, and giving the ashes back to the family. You can add on from there, but that's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
Direct cremation. So the funeral home will give me the right price? Or
yes. Make sure that the funeral homes that you're considering, and I do hope you'll look at more than one, give you what's called a general price list, and think of it just like a menu at a restaurant. It's going to have everything that they offer with a price next to it. Direct cremation is a required choice. The Federal Trade Commission's funeral rule requires that they offer both direct simple cremation and what's called direct or immediate burial, which mm-hmm. again is just burial without the embalming and the ceremony.
Who would pay for the taking the body from the hospital or wherever I die?
That's all part of direct cremation. That all comes with the service.
I hope you're around for a long time, G1. I wish you the best.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. How much should a cremation cost? A basic cremation, you want the simplest container once the body's been cremated. How much roughly should that cost?
A reasonable price for a simple direct cremation, depending on where you are in the country, is going to run you between $700 and $1,200.
And why even that much? I mean, all you're doing is you're just burning a body. Why
right.
is it?
Well, you know, and this is important to say, too. Our organization and our point of view, we're not anti-funeral director. We criticize the excesses, and we definitely want to demystify it and put the consumer on equal footing.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with making your living in the funeral business. They have to get paid. They're doing work that we don't want to do, and that mm-hmm. is worth money.
Mm-hmm.
Direct cremation is probably the simplest job for a funeral home worker. But remember, if they don't have their own crematory, if they use a third party, which is common, not all funeral homes have their own, there's going to be a $300 charge for the crematory to do mm-hmm. its work. And there's paperwork and there's some time involved in it. But you will find if you're seeing prices for a direct cremation that are $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, I'll tell you straight out, you're getting ripped off.
All right. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We're talking about the funeral industry and all kinds of things entailed with that. Let's go to Harold from Kansas City, Missouri. He was a funeral director himself. Harold, good morning.
Well, I'm not a funeral director now, but I've been around this field for 45 years.
All right.
And
I'm sorry. We just lost him. Call right back. We'll get you on the phone, Harold. Please call right back. We had a mistake with our board. Call right back. We'll get you in. Let's go to Larry from Lenexa. Larry, good morning. You there, Larry? Okay, let's
yes,
do this.
Sir.
Larry, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How is it that it was ever determined or decided that caskets would only open up on half of the casket and just the top and not the bottom half?
That's a good question.
That's good. I've never gotten that one.
Yeah.
It's regional. What you're talking about with the casket that opens just over the top half of the person is called a half couch. In the South.
A half couch?
A half couch.
Okay.
I don't ask me why. In the South, what are called full couch caskets, where the entire lid is one piece and open, mm-hmm. are still more common. No idea why.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah.
But so there's no – how did they ever even get started that people would open a half casket?
I don't know. Maybe somebody accidentally cut the lid and said, hey, this looks fantastic. Let's market these.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you, sir.
Larry, thank you. And Harold, I want to talk to somebody with the industry. So if you are out there, please call back. We just had a mistake with our board. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation with Josh Slocum. He's co-author of Final Rights, Reclaiming the American Way of Death. We'll get your phone calls and talk about a whole lot more. Brian McTavish coming in later on this hour with your weekend to-do list. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Well, this hour we're visiting with Josh Slocum, Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. He has a new book out titled Final Rites, Reclaiming the American Way of Death. It's a consumer's guide to the funeral industry. He'll be speaking tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the plaza. You'll find information about that event on our website, kcur.org. That's 2 o'clock Friday afternoon at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the plaza. Okay. Lots of questions coming in from lots of listeners. You know, what are some of the options people have when it comes to burial or cremation that maybe aren't as well known or as widely considered, Josh? Are there other options out there that maybe people don't think about very often?
Well, there's anatomical donation.
And explain that.
That's when you leave your body to science for medical study, to the medical school. There are also for-profit anatomical gift organizations that will do research and will take a donation, sometimes even if you're not suitable for a medical school.
So I
just talked to a family a couple of weeks ago. We get a lot of calls from people who are having a hard time financially, coming up with even enough money for a simple cremation. And when you suggest to them, not only could this, you know, be less costly or free for you, you're actually doing something humanitarian. Because I'll tell you what, I had heart surgery at 36, and I'm awfully glad that somebody practiced on a cadaver before they practiced on me. So you think of it as paying it forward, or backward, actually.
Now, we were talking in our first half, Josh, about caskets and burials, and we've talked about that before on this show with other guests. And if I recall correctly, no matter how I got to say this delicately, no matter how expensive a casket you buy, no matter how well it's sealed, someday, somehow, nature's going to enter in here, right? I mean, these things aren't sealed forever.
Right. And remember, if you talk to Europeans about this, if we have any European listeners, they're probably looking at us like we're a little bit nuts, because the idea—
because we're so finicky.
Yeah, of sealing a casket and that would be important, when you stop and think about it, is a little ridiculous, right?
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing that can happen to that person has already happened. They died, right?
Because people somehow think they want to protect the body.
There's nothing you can protect a dead person from, right?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you do, whether it's the simplest handmade wood coffin or a shroud or a casket with a seal on it, the body will go back to nature over time. There's nothing that's going to keep that process from happening. And my suggestion to people is, if you're considering a casket, buy one that appeals to you aesthetically, that fits your budget, and don't worry about any of the bells and whistles.
Okay, let's go back to some calls here. Let's go to Brent from Kansas City, Missouri. Brent's a funeral director, and Brent, I'm glad you called. Good morning.
Good morning. Just a couple things. When a cremation takes place, it's not ashes that the family receives. We use the term cremains, because what it actually is charred skeletal remains that are processed into a powder. So you're not actually getting ashes.
Okay.
And right. That's right.
And what happens to the rest?
Well, it basically evaporates in the retort. The retort is the machine that actually burns the outer container, the body, chars the skeletal remains, so it's cremains, not ashes, and it's quite heavy. People are always surprised at how heavy the container is when we hand it back.
Hmm.
Brett, that's a great point. I usually describe to people, I don't know what you would say, but I tell people, if you've never seen cremated remains before, it's rather like aquarium gravel in its texture and size. Would you say that's fair?
It depends on the crematory and how they process them. The crematory that I use, they process them even finer than that. Now I have had to use an out-of-town crematory for a trade call.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, then the cremains may not be as finely processed.
Brent, Josh has been making lots of points about the funeral industry during the last half hour. Anything you'd want to take exception to?
I just got into the show about 10 minutes ago,
okay.
So there's not really any exceptions. One thing that is people always, I don't know if you covered this, but as far as a vault goes at a cemetery or an outer burial container, a lot of people think that that's a state law. That's just a requirement by the cemetery.
And we've covered that, so, Brent. Yes.
Great.
Yeah. And then one other thing, a casket, we are no longer allowed to say sealed. We cannot say sealed. We can say gasketed. It can have a rubber gasket, but there's been lawsuits because, you know, when someone's exhumed, something has leaked in to the casket, which is just normal.
Sure.
But they're not allowed to say sealed any longer, so we have to use the term gasketed.
Okay. So. All right. Brent, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to Robbie here. Robbie from Baldwin City. Robbie, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I have a question about prepaid funerals. My husband and I both just want simple, sounds like direct cremation that you've talked about. But my husband's concern is that a mortuary might go out of business after you've prepaid. So I guess my question is, are there any strings attached to those prepaid funerals? And is there any guarantee that...
I'm so glad you asked that. There are more strings than I could possibly tell you. Here's my basic advice. We usually advise against prepaying. There's one situation where it may be a good idea. If a person is facing what's called a Medicaid spend down, they're going into nursing care and they're going to go on Medicaid for that, you have to spend your own assets first. You can shelter some of your money in a prepaid funeral plan and still qualify for Medicaid. But if you are not in that situation imminently, please don't prepay. Planning ahead is crucial. Paying ahead can come with all sorts of strings. And as a matter of fact, one of the worst scandals of theft happened right here in Missouri with a company called National Prearranged Services, which misappropriated itself $600-some million in customers' pre-need money. Even if the money isn't stolen, paying ahead is not good planning ahead if your survivors don't know how to carry it out. And if you should die while you're on vacation or if you should move somewhere else, you may not get all your money back. Keep your money, but make your plans.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Robbie. I was going to say, you point out that there's $600 million in prepaid funeral funds missing in Missouri. Is that what you were talking about
Yes.
just a second ago? Yeah, not a good thing. Sally writes us this from Kansas City, Missouri. My grandfather donated his body to KU Med. It was quick, easy, and it cost $25. There was a nice memorial later in the year for all the families who had donated their body. I plan to do this and would recommend it to others.
Great.
There you go. Okay. Let's go to Richard from Kansas City, Missouri. Richard, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about funerals. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Go ahead, Richard.
I wanted to just add a little bit to the conversation since I just went through this 2 weeks ago with my parent. One of the things that I think is kind of being overlooked here on the costs of funeral homes is that depending upon the overhead of that funeral home is directly proportional to how much they're going to have to charge. If it's really a beautiful funeral home, then you're going to be paying more for that service. And some people may want that because it's perhaps more dignified or more attractive to the family members.
Sure.
To choose a more expensive funeral home. The other thing that I learned about cremation that I think is being overlooked is that I discovered the prices vary on the size of the body. And I was always asked if the person was heavy when I was trying to make arrangements for cremation. And I'd also learned that some companies include a hard impact box for the cremains that comes free with the service. You don't have to buy an urn or a container. Lastly, I discovered here in the state of Missouri and Kansas, there's authorization letters required to cremate when there are survivors. That can create up to a week delay. Some places have to charge for the body as it sits in the morgue waiting for out-of-town family members to supply their authorization letters for the cremaine to occur. I also discovered that you have to have a permit to cross state lines with those remains.
No, that's not – I don't believe that's true.
I have a permit. I have a permit. My parent is going to be buried in Nebraska next to my dad.
Yeah, let me slow you down here, Richard.
I have a permit.
Let me slow you down for a second. This notion that the body weight of someone who has passed might impact the cost of a cremation, is that right?
In cases of really big obesity, Yes, there is sometimes an additional charge because it is more work for the crematory, and they do have to take additional steps. But it's not a usual question unless the person was of an extraordinary size.
I got it every time.
Hmm. Wow.
All right.
I got it every time.
Wow.
That's basically all I wanted to to mention, and that also people may forget that many times the funeral director is doing a lot of extra work contacting an insurance an annuitant, Social Security. They do all kinds of other things than just the basic services. And I think that in my experience in meeting with various companies, asked to come and meet with them, never had the experience of anybody pressuring.
Good.
They offered. Would you like this? Would you like that?
Right.
And the packages that were presented to me were actually priced just like buying an individual orange or a bag of orange.
All right, Richard, I've got to move on here to other calls. I appreciate your phone call. Let me go to Thad from Kansas City, Kansas. Thad, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thanks, Thad.
I'm a local funeral director also. I own a small funeral home in Kansas City, Kansas,
mm-hmm.
and as a friend of the Funeral Alliance for many, many years
Good
now.
For you.
And I think Josh is exactly right that people do need to look around and to see what is available to get references from the hospice workers, from hospitals, from friends, family, and visit a multitude of funeral homes before they make a decision.
Thad, thanks for saying so, and thanks for being out there in the business. Glad to have somebody like you as a friend. Come see me tomorrow.
I plan on it. Like I said, I've been 20-plus years a friend of the Alliance.
Thank you.
And have enjoyed your presentation so far.
Thank you.
All right, Thad, thank you for the phone call. Beth writes us this. What happens with a cadaver donation of a donor if the donor dies in another city? What should one do to prepare for the unexpected, the least costly and burdensome to surviving family members in a situation like that?
Great question. You may want to donate your body to science, but they may not be able to take it for various reasons because of where you died. So what you do, have a backup plan. A lot of people will go with a direct cremation, but there are a couple of other options. So there are some companies that do anatomical donation that say that they will go anywhere in the country and take you. So people can look at our website and contact me, and I can give advice on that as well.
Okay. Brian from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, Brian, thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. It's Josh, if that's correct.
That's right.
My question is, if you wanted to, in terms of law, you have to be buried in a cemetery or a mausoleum or something like that. You can't just take somebody out to their private land and bury them. So I'm wondering about law and stuff like that.
Yes. Yes, you can. Home burial is permissible in the state of Missouri. You need to talk to your county or town registrar, the zoning people. They're not going to let you do it if you're within city limits for the most part. But home burial on the farm outside city limits is a fine old American tradition in most parts of the country.
But you can't do it in the city, though, you're saying, probably.
Yeah. Now, people do with ashes and cremated remains what they will, really.
Mm-hmm.
There's no checking on that, but a whole casket, they're not going to let you do that in a suburban area.
How about the state of Kansas? Do you have that handy there?
I think it's the same there. In most states, the state laws don't say anything about home burial. I don't have Kansas to hand. I believe that it is also possible, but anybody who wants to check on that can contact me later, and I can answer questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thanks.
Brian, thank you. I appreciate that. Let's go to Allison from Overland Park. Allison, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve. Josh, I was curious about direct interment. My mother's talked to me extensively, and she wants a direct interment, about finding a cemetery that will allow that and a funeral home that will help facilitate that.
You mean without a vault and without a casket?
Yes.
Okay. It's going to be tough. You should look around and talk to them. It goes on a case-by-case basis. Start talking to cemeteries. Small rural ones may accommodate you more so than the larger ones. And again, for anybody who has a question, they can always email and I'll answer if we can't talk about it on the air.
All right. Allison, thank you. You know, what percentage, Josh, of bodies these days are buried, you know, in the ground? What percentage are cremated, and is that changing?
Big time. Cremation, about 44% of deaths in the U.S. end in cremation now.
Wow, 44%? 44%. That's remarkable to me.
Well, back in 1962, it was about 2 or 3%, so it's a huge difference. It varies by state. I don't remember Missouri's cremation rate, but places like the Pacific Northwest, it's big. Up in the Northeast, it's getting bigger. South and Midwest, a little more burial.
Okay. We have a call here from Elaine from Kansas City, Missouri. Elaine, good morning to you.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I've had, unfortunately, a few people, friends pass in the last couple of years, and the services have been held by all the arrangements have been handled by a storefront funeral service called Signature Funerals, and they do a remarkably good job, and they have reduced the cost considerably for what you would normally have to pay. I know people are paying now almost half of what we had to do when we got my mom and dad cremated several years ago.
Great.
Yeah.
We're seeing more of that, too.
Yeah.
Low overhead, moderate price.
Again, Josh Slocum speaks tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Kansas City, Missouri Library, the branch on the Country Club Plaza. More information about that event on our website, kcur.org. And Josh's new book, again, he's co-author of Final Rites, Reclaiming the American Way of Death. And been such a good hour with you, Josh. Thanks for coming in today. Really enjoyed
having
you here.
My pleasure. Delightful.
You bet.